It was the sparkle of lights just coming on as dusk fell that first caught my eye. I pulled my gaze back, seeing the two young men watching the same lights, sitting on top of a hill above the city, the mountains rising in the background, and the clouds beyond them. The first man has his arm around the second, while the second takes a slow drag from a cigarette. The colors of everything in sight are lush and relaxed, almost whimsical. It looked like a place I would want to visit. I continued. It was the beginning of a photo essay by Tomas Ayuso titled "The Right to Grow Old." As I scrolled further down, I came to understand why. This city of twinkling lights is San Pedro Sula in Honduras. It is one of the most dangerous cities in the world based on the number of homicides per capita. Growing up, let alone growing old, is not a given there. As I dug deeper, I saw photos of young teenagers grooming even younger boys towards initiation into their gangs. I saw fathers and sons working the farmland, but without much promise that it would bear fruit. I saw young couples discerning their futures together there. Ayuso told their stories, what it's like living there, and why so many people are leaving, and how treacherous it is to go north. I saw tremendous beauty in these photos, and a lot of heartache. I saw something else. I saw there the embodied impact of the powers that be, the way the whole system is born of brokenness and greed and fear, and how this system plays out in these individual lives, right in their literal flesh. I saw easily the connection with these spiritual forces of evil that Paul describes here in the end of the letter to the Ephesians. This talk is pretty different from how we generally talk about the world, though I wonder if some context might help. For starters, most scholars agree that the letter wasn't actually written by Paul, but probably by a disciple or maybe an admirer. Paul had spent a lot of time there in Ephesus, but this person doesn't sound to know the place. You know, there are no anecdotes or shout-outs to special people as Paul likes to do. The letter was probably actually meant to be circulated around lots of churches. The earliest manuscripts just say that it's to the saints who are faithful in Jesus Christ in wherever they might be, fill in the blank. And wherever they are in the minority. These early Christians are persecuted. It is a dangerous and unstable life that they have chosen. And so the writer of this letter thinks that they need to be reminded to protect themselves, to keep themselves safe and whole. But that's not all. It's not just about protection. They are to recognize the evil forces at work around them and then stand firm in resisting them. To that end, this week I broke out my old copy of Walter Wink's The Powers That Be. It was written some 20 years ago, and it could have been written last week. Wink asserts that all groups of humans have a spirit, a sense of them, a spiritual reality. I visited a whole bunch of churches across the country this summer on sabbatical, and I have to agree, you know, you just walk in and you can get a sense of a place, what's important to them and what makes them tick. But really discerning these ephemeral spirits, it can be hard to pin them down. You can pay attention, though. You can look for them. What happens to your body when you come into a place or join a group? What seems suddenly possible or maybe now impossible once you're there? How do people engage each other or engage you, the stranger, in their midst? There are these spirits. It's present in a school or in cities or any place, a business, countries. Some might call it the culture of a place or its ethos, but Wink takes that idea deeper, saying that every group or organization has this outer visible structure and also an inner spiritual reality. He argues that any and every group can turn towards evil and is capable of being redeemed. None, not one, is inherently evil. For him, evil is not a fixed or permanent thing. It's about turning away. Groups live out that spiritual force of wickedness only when they turn away from the vocation that God has called them to. That is, to serve the greater good, to be who they were made to be. When we, as a group, make our own interests the highest good rather than God's call, then the inner spirituality of our group is hijacked and we fall away. We crash into evil powers all the time, though we usually describe them in other terms. And it's tempting to assign this demon to someone, put it squarely on a specific person's shoulders. It's his fault. She's responsible for this. But we do so at our own peril. For then we fail to see the greater spirit at work, the force of evil still pushing forward in the organization, even when that person is gone. This letter to the Ephesians insists that the struggle is not about fighting individual people, though. It's not about fighting people at all. The struggle is so much bigger than just taking down a corrupt government or a violent leader or a relentless gang. This letter is rallying people to stand firm in the face of a whole system of evil and reach only for the word. I got lost in that essay. Completely sucked into the photos. There were almost unbelievable stories of violence back in these neighborhoods dominated by gangs in San Pedro Sula. They would have been unbelievable, I think, save for these weary faces, exhausted from fear, staring back at me. I took in the degree of complete economic destitution. For many, there's no real possibility of having enough, whether they stay in the rural areas or move to the city. I saw the people they met along the route to migrate north, coyotes charging thousands of dollars for a chance of making it. Members of drug cartels, self-appointed militias scouring the northern side of the border. And it's tempting to choose a corrupt person and call for impeachment, or select a group of people and blame our collective problems on them. But the answers here, they're not easy, because the powers are more complicated than that. Wink argues that they are not inherently bad, just often misdirected. He writes that by acknowledging that the powers are good, bad, and salvageable all at once, we are freed from the temptation to demonize those who do evil. We can love our enemies or nation or church or school not with ignorant acceptance, but critically, calling them back time and again to their own highest self-professed ideals and identities. This is the word, this calling back. Ephesians encourages us to get real and brave in naming who we are called to be. The only kind of offense this letter offers against the evil powers is the word. This word of God, as it comes to us in the Greek, it's an active word. It's not written, but spoken. The word proclaimed truth uttered into reality. But this gospel of truth is not just the one already written. It's also a living gospel still unfolding. Maybe this is why Tomás Ayuso's work was so striking to me. Not because the photos were beautiful, but because of the bold truth he offered in the face of corruption and greed and horrific violence. He did not attack people or demonize them. He just walked through Honduras, his own country, following the migration route through safe houses and past freight trains filled with people, around hideouts and checkpoints, listening, bearing witness, and passing on the story. His photos speak truth to the powers that be. They shine light on the forces of evil in our midst. This is the word, active, forward moving, searching, revealing. His actual words are few. It is these photos that proclaim the gospel of peace. Ayuso's witness is an example. He shows us one way that this can be done, one way of staying whole and speaking truth and resisting. He calls us to action by his example. He calls us to step up and to stand firm. And so here we are, beginning a new year, joining new groups of people, wondering what it may hold. How do we respond? In our lives, in our groups and communities, and in our country, how will we rise and resist and speak truth? How will we come to see the spirits of these places, discerning where we are responding to God's call and where we have fallen away? And then, living this truth, how will we stand firm in proclaiming this gospel of peace?